Brian.
And I'm Reggie.
And once again, this is R&B Talks.
Would it be twice again? This is 37th again?
I thought we were close to 40th.
No.
No? Okay. All right. Shows you how much I keep track of.
Happy 37th episode.
Happy 37th episode, Reggie. I feel like we should have a banner.
No.
No? Okay. No banner. All right. Well, anyway, welcome back.
To R&B Talks! Yeah!
Reggie, how was your week?
It's fine. I mean, you know.
Same old.
Yeah, there's school, nothing.
Studies, life.
Yeah. Same old.
Tell you what, man, I'm having some troubles. Like, I'm now have these big swaths of time and it's difficult to fill them. And I find my mind wandering off to things that are not necessarily bad for me, but I would never have thought of before.
Oh, the idle mind leads to the wicked ways.
Oh, by the way, I have a werewolf squirrel that lives next to my house, just so you know. Hmm. We've named him Chungus. This squirrel is so big, Reggie, that it doesn't run. It lumbers. I've seen him twice.
I've seen some waddling squirrels.
Like, so, this, yeah. This sucker, like, this is turkey size, full-size grown turkey squirrel. Like, this thing is huge. And it's red. I mean, red like red.
You sure it's not a fox, dude?
No. I thought at first it was, when I first saw it, I said, this is someone's dog. And then I realized by looking at the tail that is not a dog.
That's not a dog.
That is a squirrel.
Okay.
And then when he took off to run, he looked like he was going to run. And he was like, yeah, no. I'm just going to walk into the woods because I'm an entirely morbidly obese squirrel.
We got some pretty fast squirrels around here too.
Dude, this one took the cake. There's
plenty.
Yes.
We're the land of plenty for squirrels.
The squirrels and groundhogs and possums.
Yeah. Well, but the eagle that soars around here has plenty to eat as well. So he is definitely not a small fellow. Or maybe it's the female I see. I can't remember. No, it is the male. Yeah.
Hey man, the majestic eagle soars, my friend. The majestic eagle soars.
It was funny when we moved in here. We were putting up the chicken coop, and we wanted to put it in a certain place, and there's four hawk nests right around it. So I had to enclose the whole thing with nets and fencing and all that kind of stuff to make sure the hawks couldn't come down and get the chickens. Well, it wasn't but a couple of years after we were here, an eagle moved in apparently, and boy, there ain't no hawk nests around anymore. We now have one that lives here. One nest that's actually in the backyard, like right over that way. But yeah, the eagle moved in and it was like all the hawks went away.
Because he's the boss.
Him. Oh yeah, dude. I'm gonna blame him.
He's the boss. Had some amazing barbecue whilst in St. Louis. There's a place called Beast Barbecue. It was on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Dude, I gotta say, Reggie.
I know Beast.
They were unbelievable.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
You know what the best thing was that they had? You're going to cackle when you hear this.
Probably not, because
they're Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts have been like a new thing, right? Not, I shouldn't say a new thing, but like a thing that people are starting to do more of. Like, you see a lot of barbecue places now starting to do Brussels sprouts because apparently, you know, once you do it a certain way, it comes out a lot different. And I'll tell you, I'm just anti Brussels sprout. So,
all right, let me see if you're anti this. They took pork belly and cut it into chunks.
Yep.
And then they chopped the Brussels sprouts in half. And I'm talking, these were big, they're big Brussels sprouts.
They can be big, yeah.
And they slow smoked them with the other meats as they were smoking, as this girl explained it to me when I asked her. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And their pork barbecue was fire. But those Brussels sprouts, you could have just served me those and I'd have been happy.
That's crazy, man.
I know.
Somebody else was, Meat Church, I think, on YouTube the other day was talking about Brussels sprouts or something, maybe. Or what was it? Mad Scientist Barbecue. I can't remember. I watch all these. I watch all these guys. So, yeah. I would try it, but it doesn't excite me, bro. I mean, you know, it's like, meh, it's Brussels sprouts.
Anything with pork belly in it excites me.
I mean, I've actually smoked a pork belly.
Oh my God, so good.
And it's really good, but you gotta really like the fat taste.
Well, I think pork. Fat is flavor.
It is, but some people really don't like that. They don't like it. I mean, sometimes
they should,
because that's like to the extreme, right?
They should not be allowed to eat smoked meats. Then, if you don't like fat, you shouldn't be allowed to eat smoked meats. You probably eat tofu.
Couple racks of ribs to go on tomorrow.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah.
It's grilling season, man. I'm firing up the Blackstone tomorrow, and I'm going to fire up some smash burgers.
You should.
Yeah. It's time.
You should.
You know, I found the drawback to having a flat iron. I found the drawback. Even if you season them properly, they still rust.
Well, I mean, any metal you leave outside long enough, it's going to rust. But the seasoning it's like a freaking art form. I don't care who says this is the foolproof way to season cast iron this way or that way. Like, dude, there's a wizardry that goes on to season those things, right? You know, it just does. Like,
there's no way around it.
I followed all kinds of different directions.
There's no way around it.
And, so finally we've got to the point where our cast iron skillet, we use cast iron all the time.
Yeah.
Is in good condition and stuff and not being messed up by me all the time. But yeah, it took forever. But even then though, my griddle outside, it's okay right now, but I wonder if I did it, you know, correctly or whatever. I don't know.
Well, yeah. Tomorrow we start, tomorrow it's 80 degrees. It's the first day of summer, in my opinion. If it cracks 80, if it cracks past 79, it's the first day of summer, in my opinion. So it's going to be a nice day, great day to grill.
Yeah, that'll be a good day. I'm actually looking forward to it myself. I got to do my assignment for school tomorrow. So it'll be like the ribs will be on the smoker while I'm monitoring on my phone and having fun.
Dude, you got to get through school, man.
I like it though. It's the thing. I mean, you know, I like it.
Well, here's my question.
But I'm burnt out on it right now, though.
When school's over, what are you going to do?
I don't know yet. It's. I don't know. I got to pass it on some way. I do it here. I use it here. It's not like I don't.
You do
use it. I need to get more formally entwined with the church. That would help significantly, I'm sure. And I need to broaden that a little bit, I think, because I remember, you know, in Encounter, when we were going to Encounter, that was like a 45 minute drive for me. It was all the way across the entire, it's probably, it would be longer now living out here, but I don't ever remember saying, you know what, it wasn't worth it. You know what I mean? So I really just need to find somewhere that's, you know, within 30 minutes would be preferable.
Well, here's the thing.
But, you know.
Here's the thing, dude. And I have actually been called out on this by a few people that I know. But I say this not in a way to be mean or to dismiss a church. But as I have matured in my faith, I have learned more and more that it's not about the church.
Oh, yeah.
Correct. That it's about being fed. Because, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of the reason why we go to church is because we want to be fed. We want some kind of spiritual feeding, right? We want to go to a place with others who think the way we do, and we want a spiritual feeding. Now, the thing I will tell you is, for many years, I put way too much stock in the church itself.
Yeah.
As to be my spiritual guide, right? And don't get me wrong, there are great spiritual people within the church, but... I'm just learning more and more that it's just not about the church itself. It's about the message and getting the tools that I need, sharpening my tools so that I can go out into the world and carry forward what I need to. That's not to dismiss people within the church. I know great people within the church. I know awesome people within the church. I have been vocal about the fact that I'm just fiercely disappointed in the state of the modern Western church. But that doesn't mean every church.
No.
Right? So,
no.
Dude, I think you could find probably someplace within 5 minutes of here.
Sort of.
There are small churches all over where we live.
There is. So here's my problem. Like we out here anyway, you have a lot of cultish Christian churches out here.
Yes, you do.
Okay. And really that's my, I will not know. That will not work for me. If you want me to like go to a service and like stand up and start rebuking the preacher, then yeah. But we could probably do a whole YouTube series about me going to a church and standing up in the middle of the service. Whoa.
Yeah. Wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
You know.
Wrong. Wrong.
Oh, wait a minute. We have the thing coming up this week.
Yes. The thing Tuesday.
Oh, I'm excited about that. Yeah.
I actually went to Caleb's concert a week early so that I could go to this thing with you.
Yes.
By the way, my son played brilliantly today. Good. That's beside the point.
Okay. But yeah, so I wanted to make something of an episode from that just because I think it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But the guy that I find hilarious, the Holy Nope, I think he's going to be there.
The Holy Nope.
Oh dude, it's so great. His mustache is epic. And one of the guys actually speaking, I know him from his YouTube stuff that he's done. So it'll be interesting to see what this all plays out. So I'm planning on taking some notes and stuff and, you know, maybe we'll talk about that next week.
I'm just excited to go to
something,
a man oriented kind of war room. Just engagement, right?
I don't know what this is going to be though, man. I mean, like,
who knows,
man? Really don't know.
I'm just excited to show up because I mean, I follow the guy who's speaking as well, and I think that it's a very, very excited, man. Because I really like to do things where I'm out of the normal element and I'm challenged mentally, emotionally, spiritually in those situations. And I love that stuff. I speak about it all the time, but when we went to Southeast and saw the whole, you know, 13 hours, the guys show up from 13 hours that were just, that just challenged me spiritually when listening to him, you know, when he talked about the one part they didn't put in the movie, which right before they all took their post, they stood in the hallway and they all prayed. I was like, dude, you go,
yeah,
brother. And he was very angry because they took that part out.
He was livid.
Yeah. And I'm like, dude, that's, to hear you say that just makes me excited, right? So I was very glad that you invited me. I even sent that out to a few other people to see if they wanted to go. They told them to go online and register because I thought, man, what more, the more the better to show up for something like that and get fed, right?
So let me speak about the whole, I think getting fed is a good thing from the church. And I think it depends on where you're at in your walk as well. Right. Cause it's not about just being reminded of the gospel all the time in services or whatever, but it's also about how you can serve other people in the body of Christ. Right. And so for me, that's really where it's hitting home more than anything. It's just like, you know, I'm since I'm going to school for theology, like I'm in the book all the time. So it's like, I'm reminded of the gospel constantly all the time now. However, I'm not serving as many people as I think I could. Now, I have a lot of obligations, like, you know, my family and everything have to come first behind all that, which is also a downfall of some pastors, by the way. I'll say that some pastors get so wrapped up in their ministry that they forget about their own families. And that's why you see a bunch of these like pastor kids and stuff kind of go way off the chart. That's not all the reason.
Yeah.
And that actually leads us to our topic today, because this particular how to deal with sinners came about from, I was watching the Michael Knowles episode where he was interviewing Nala Ray, who is an OnlyFans, who was an OnlyFans star or whatever, and completely left that lifestyle to come back to Christ. So before we get into that though, we should listen to our sponsor.
Yes. EMTCC.
Take it away.
.net or
no, .net.
.net?
Okay. .net. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm computer illiterate. Take it away, EMTCC.
Picture this, Brian. You're out with the fellas and you get a call from mom. What's that, mom? Your printer's acting up again? I'll be right there.
Reggie, we all love mom, but wouldn't it be great if just this once we could send someone in your place?
Sure would.
At Edwards Managed Technology Computer Consulting, rest assured that they'll take care of mom, dad, brother, sister, and even that one aunt with all the cats.
Don't feel bad sending your loved ones to voicemail. Just make sure you text them about Edwards Managed Consulting. They fix computers, printers, and so much more.
Visit www.emtcc.net to make an appointment or give us a call at 1-888-551-2770. Mention R&B Talks for your 10% off your appointment. Remote and on-site options available.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Edwards.
And we're back.
Bad to the bone.
Bad.
Sin, brother. Sin.
So here's my ultimate question about sin. And like I told you before we started, when you sent me this, I dove down a deep, deep rabbit hole of things like Sir Thomas Aquinas and Pelagius and all those things. And then I kind of stopped myself because I was like, I thought my brain might leak out my right ear. But I think what, if correct me if I'm wrong, I think what you're trying to broach is how the church treats sin and sinners. Is that what I think that is where it's going to get to? Okay. All right, cool. Lay it on me, bro. Let's get started.
Okay. There's one misconception that I really had on the top of my list that I needed to straighten out.
Okay.
And this was reconfirmed for me recently when I saw an R.C. Sproul message. That whole God hates the sin, not the sinner. Wrong. Understand something. Why would he put the sinner in hell if he just hated the sin? Right.
I think that rules more for us than it is for God.
I know, but it really needs to be said, right? He's looking at you saying, you really screwed this up. You've made the choice to be separate from me. Here you go. Yeah. I'm now allowing you to do that forever.
Yeah.
Here you go. So again, we've mentioned this before, but I'm not going to get into like what hell really is. Now it's a highly debated topic. There's not that much in the text about what hell is. Hell, there's even people who have said they've experienced hell and been brought back and tells stories about what that really is. So look, if you want to go down that rabbit hole, by all means,
it's another episode.
It's a whole thing, right? Yeah. But for this, let me share. So I want to make sure we understand really what sin is, because it's important for us to start from there before we start talking about why we need to deal with it.
Yes.
Okay. So, the Anchor Yale Bible Dictionary kind of defines sin as the human deviation from the expressed will and desires of God. The Baker Encyclopedia of the Bible says evil doing seen in religious perspective, not only against humanity, society, others, or oneself, but against God. Then you have the most frequent, and I don't know all, I'm not going to sit and label all the, for one, pronouncing Hebrew is not really my thing, but I'll just say the most frequent biblical words used in like the Old Testament mean to miss the mark or fail in your duty. Actually, not Old Testament. That's throughout the whole Bible. But and really, you see that in Romans 3:25. And other terms also kind of lead to meaning transgression. In the Old Testament, trespassing upon God's kingly prerogative, a false step out of the appointed way. In the New Testament, perverseness, wrongness, rejecting divine rule. So that's kind of what you see there. And for a direct biblical text from a verse, Matthew 6:12, sin is as a debt, an unpaid obligation to God who is owed. I can't even read my own handwriting. Look at that go.
Let me break it down for you like this. if God hated the sin and not the sinner, then Christ would not have needed to die.
Correct.
It is not about what God... I think where the Western Church has steered it into the wall is that they are assuming in a lot of cases the role of God and hating the sinner instead of assuming the role that we were handed, which is to love the sinner and bring them to God.
Yes.
And I think that is a very common break in how sin is treated within the Western Church.
And that goes along with how we see ourselves as well. I mean, the Western idea of goodness seems to be just like this overarching absolute for everybody that, oh, he's really a good guy, or they're really just a good person. They're just, you know, they just made a mistake or something. Well, here's the deal. None of the apostles or people that were really talked about a lot, especially in the New Testament, said they were good people. All of them said they were wretched. Like Paul said, he's a wretched sinner. I mean, all of them did. They all said how, they used all kinds of harsh language to describe themselves as not being good. That's even after they've done some incredible things and stuff. They still said they were good. And Paul even goes to the extent of saying, I do what I don't want to do, and I don't do what I should do. You know, yeah. I mean, he says this, right? But this is freaking Paul.
Yeah.
Who saw Jesus on the road to Damascus, right? You're like, legit. Freaking Jesus, wham, right there in front of him. So he has this huge experience, and yet he still had struggles with this stuff.
You got it.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, look, we have the start to how to answer how to deal with sinners is to start how to deal with yourself as a sinner, first and foremost.
Let me tell you my opinion on that. Okay, being a nice guy leads to a life of sin.
I would correct.
Being a good man leads to the road to Christ. And let me explain what I mean by that.
I would love you to.
Nice guys want to please everyone. Nice guys will doormat for anything that comes in front of them because they don't want to offend anyone or be seen as hyper-masculine or any of the things that our current society points at as toxic.
Yes.
A good man knows his limits and knows better than to approach them.
I would say a good man has principles.
That's right.
Not only has principles, but he's steadfast in those principles. So there's not only is that good man, I mean, he could be nice about some things, but there's tolerance only goes so far.
Yeah.
If you have principles that you stand by.
Well, I stand on the fact that I have a role, right? And my role is to shepherd my family.
Correct.
Which I've faltered at times.
Dude, we all have. I mean, come on. Wretched.
It is to lead by example, right? Work hard, provide, all of those things, because those are my callings, and to never allow my own wants or needs to interfere with what I am called to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I know a lot of nice guys, a lot of them. I know a ton of nice guys. I know a ton of nice guys who will stand for nothing and fall for everything.
Yes.
I know a lot of good men who I surround myself with. Wise counsel, good men, right? Because I know that those men, even if I don't necessarily agree with their methodology, stand on their principles and are pointed to God.
Now, let me ask you this, though. Does it matter where these principles come from, Brian?
Absolutely, it does. Absolutely, it does.
Why I say that, because I know a lot of nice guys, or even men who have principles, stout principles that will stand up for what they believe, but what they believe is wrong.
Well,
see,
I think even good men can be misled.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, let's talk about the fact that we're born of sin, right? So you and I fight that battle every day. Some men can be led to believe in other things and stand for their principles. But most of those good men have faltered because they built their house on shifting sand, man. Yeah. Because let's be clear. As a good man, I can stand and defend my faith on a single basis. And the single basis I can defend my faith on is let's say it's all a lie. Let's say, you know, Herbert Rupenstein wrote the Bible and it's just a great story. But I live my life by those principles, right? What have I lost? I've lost nothing.
But I don't really like that.
I don't mean that is something I would do, but I use that as a measure for what I put my faith in.
Why I don't care for that is you could actually say that about so many different scenarios and so many different things and so many different beliefs that it really becomes a false equivalency to being the truth.
I honestly don't think so, and here's why. Let's take them all and put them on the table against Christianity, right? All of those are centered on self.
No.
I think Christianity is the only one that is not centered on self.
There's the Bhagavad Gita, the writings of Confucius, the Tao Te Ching, the stuff. There's a lot of different texts though that really point to being servitude and like helping your, you know, karma,
But think about it.
They roll back to the self.
They do. I know. But they roll back to the self.
They do. However, those same principles can still be applied in other words, if you saw one person do that, like they did the exact same thing, but they were, their principles rooted in two different things. You couldn't offhand tell which that came from.
Yeah.
That would be within each of their own, you know, character and principles they fall under, right? So for when I look at stuff, I do think Christianity is unique in because not only is it not about the self, it's about letting go of the self and letting Christ live in you. It's like you died on the cross with Jesus, pretty much. When you say, Jesus is the way, the truth, the life, that is where I'm going, then you've just crucified yourself with Jesus.
Yeah.
You are now, Christ is now living in you through you, right? That's mm-hmm. really how that all works.
That's supposed to work.
Right. That's completely different from any other religious aspects or whatever. And really what the differentiation becomes that your ultimate purpose in whatever you do is not for fulfillment of somebody else or you, it's the fulfillment of you being more like Christ.
Yes.
I get that, right? But I'm saying, like, if you were to look around, though, you wouldn't, if you looked at two individuals, you couldn't tell which those are if they are trying to be good, right?
Well, but I think that also depends on how well you've educated yourself on the things that they've planted their beliefs in.
Well, yeah. I mean,
and I think you and I are pretty educated on.
Well, I've had to study it.
So. You've had to study it, and I've made a pretty good hobby of looking at it. And it's, you know, for me, Christ commands selflessness.
He demands it.
He demands selflessness. And by our nature, we are broken. Therefore, we are selfish. So to deny our nature and follow Christ is the ultimate, it to me is the ultimate signal that living in that vein is okay. Let's take karma. Oh, I get to live again on earth, but I'm going to live as something else. But if I do good acts, I'll be something good. Well, that's selfish. Christ promises me only one thing, salvation. He does not promise me that what I will suffer is going to be easy. He does not promise me. He is the only one that gives you the very truth of what it means to be a man in this world.
That's true. I'm not going to disagree with that. I mean,
that's why I say that. It's not because I believe that that's something that you should stand your faith on.
Yeah.
But Christ is the only one that is truthful to you in the Bible and says, yo, it will not be easy. You will be persecuted. You will be treated poorly. You will fight every day of your life in one way or another to follow me. The only thing I'm going to promise you is if you make it to the end, I will be there to reward you. But you got to do what I'm calling you to do. And you got to be selfless.
Okay. I do want to make this point. It's okay to feel good about being selfless.
It is.
It's okay to like look forward to the reward that you have in heaven, whatever that, you know, even if it's just glorifying God forever and ever. Okay, cool. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. there is a point of like, and you gotta be careful with pride.
Let's yes.
make that clear. But there is a good sense of pride when it comes to I am doing right by Christ.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. So I want to say that. So we've talked kind of like what sin is and kind of that kind of stuff. What, going back to the Michael Knowles interview, which I'll post a link in the description or whatever. Nala Ray, one of the most successful OnlyFans people ever, top 0.0% or something, one, you know, stupid. Even says in the interview she made $9 million off of OnlyFans. She made $85,000 in 1 month.
It's a lot of money.
Starting out before she did adult stuff.
Yeah.
Just taking pictures and everything. She was a pastor's kid. Now, I wonder what kind of pastor, and I say this, and I don't know, obviously I don't know the guy. I can't rail on him or anything. I'll just say that they had a divorce. And when she was a child, that really messed things up, being, you know, and they did end up getting back together or whatever. But when she decided to go to OnlyFans and start doing that for a living, she was pretty much this is what she says. She's disowned by her parents. I mean, her mom wouldn't even speak to her. Her dad was like, instead of being a dad, he preached at her. And that just drove her further away. And she moved out to California to start doing the adult stuff and everything else on OnlyFans. And I think this is more common than what we want to admit.
I do believe so.
Okay. Now, I've seen this happen, not that particular scenario, but I've seen people be snobbish in churches.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And I get really angry. Because again, it's like why are we as Christians looking at someone who's a sinner, just like you are? It doesn't matter the sin, you still sinning. And instead of trying to help or encourage or whatever, you kind of shrug off or be a total complete douche nozzle, you know?
Great. Douche nozzle.
Dude. I like it. I mean, I just, it torques me up, man. And I'll be fair here. And I don't know if this, I've seen this more in women than I have in men.
I honestly think a lot of it is generational. And this is what I mean by that.
Yeah, that's probably true.
You know, my grandmother was so guilty of assumption based on no knowledge. And I don't get me wrong, I loved my grandmother. Like, if I could go back and give you a top 10 of the most influential people in my life, it was my grandmother. But she was so quick to assume someone's position and station based on the appearance. Mm. And a lot of it, I think, was based on being raised in those old traditional, you know, sin ridden, you don't do hellfire and brimstone, you're dying. you're going to go to hell regardless, right? Like, I don't, and I think a lot of it, a very large percentage of it, is generational. I also think, and here I'm going to blow your mind with this one, I also think a lot of it is being bled into the church in order to fragment the church. I think a lot of people are, I'll use my father as an example. He went to a very traditional Christian church, him and my stepmother, which I went to that church a few times. It was very traditional, but a great church. Preacher was really good. My dad preached a little bit. And an aberrant influence came into the church and basically shattered the church. And it seemed almost intentional, but it was this hammer of judgment, judging the traditions of the church, the people of the church, the pastor of the church, the worship of the church. It was this just repeated jackhammer of judgment based on nothing that they had any factual basis for. So I think a lot of that is the devil is finding a way to fracture the church from within, because he can't be in it, right? In the traditional sense. So, and we both know, and I've said this 1,000 times, devil's not capable of creating anything.
No.
He's capable of destroying, but he's not able to create.
Manipulation, deception.
He manipulates and deceives and causes fragmenting within the church. And I believe a lot of what you're talking about is this fragmenting of the church from outside of it.
I mean, sometimes, I mean, and there are some churches who, okay, so I'll step this back. In the Western Christian church, you have a lot of churches who avoid the conversation of hell or sin or whatever. They just talk about all the fluffy good things. You need the fluffy good things. Don't get me wrong. You need to know about salvation. You know about forgiveness and repentance and like mercy and grace and faith and all those type of things. Those are critical, right? Yeah. But you also need the flip side of that coin to know, like, and to remind us, like, look, you're a human being. Yeah. You are a fallen creature in a fallen world. You need this light of Christ to get rid of the darkness.
Yeah.
But you are not Christ.
Yeah.
You will never be Christ.
Well, I also think
that has to be taught.
I also think there are tenets within the church that are used improperly. Forgiveness would be one of them.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, you know, I forgive you. You've heard it. And do I think that there are sins that people can commit that can be forgiven by God, but can't be forgiven by man? Absolutely. There are certain, I have lines. If you cross them, I'll forgive you. I'll let it go. But you know, a wise man once told me that once a person paints a picture for you, don't let them repaint it. And what I mean by that is, we are all human, right? So if somebody can talk sweet enough and smooth enough, they can trick your mind. So when someone paints a picture, when someone breaks that covenant of trust and honesty and belief, yeah, I forgive you, but you can't come back from that with me. So I'm not going to associate or affiliate with you anymore. But what I believe is happening within the church is forgiveness is being used as a form of judgment. I look down on you, but I'll forgive you.
Yeah, you know that's not, that's not it. And what you, when you were just talking, this came to me. I remember this story about the parents who their kid was murdered, and they were strong, devout Christ followers,
mm-hmm.
and they ended up befriending and actually getting the murderer of their kids into church, getting them saved, all this stuff.
Yep.
And like he became part of their family. And that's wild.
That's a capability that I may not have.
But I guess when I'm looking at that going, I don't know if I could do that. That's really what I'm saying. Like,
and if they couldn't, I wouldn't blame them.
No, that's what I mean. But like, That's the ultimate biblical. That right there could be in the canon of scripture and be considered a miracle. in my assertion, right? I mean, that's
absolutely.
I mean, it was just mind boggling to me, right? And I mean, I want to be that way. Not that I don't, but I know where I am.
Well, let's be clear. Let's be clear. As I said it before, that is not something that I alone am capable of.
Well,
Christ would have to intervene.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I would dare say that if you really dug down to the core of that, there was an intervention by Christ in that situation that brought them to that point. No doubt.
I have no doubt. I'm just saying that that's an example of that. But that's completely that whole scenario though is so out of touch with what I have seen in America's church. Okay. Somebody comes in who's looks ragged, something like that, and gets treated poorly. I've seen also too where maybe like a prostitute or like a stripper or something is trying to really get out of that life, and she comes to church and like gets a weird look because all she has is the clothes she has, right?
Yeah.
No. Now, let me say this too. Yes, that stuff drives me nuts, but you also can get really burned by this stuff too, because people think they want to change, but they really don't want to change, and they end up acting like a fool and causing problems and stuff like this. I've seen this too, where especially with some of the more destitute individuals or whatever, they be welcomed in, and then they'll cause some kind of thing that is either a disruption or a real problem for the other people in the body of, you know, believers, right? So what I would say is you can't be so callous about anybody by looking at them or from your experience, but you still have to keep in mind that you do have to be on guard.
Yes. Agreed.
Okay. It's easy. People can, I mean, obviously you can have some lying and everything else going on too. So, you know, like I'll tell you this. When I was a single man, I think I might have said this before, I found an acquaintance of a friend of mine who was homeless, needed a place to stay. I went and picked him up, and he stayed in my house. When it was just me, it wasn't really a big deal. I didn't care.
Yeah.
I knew I could take care of myself. He wasn't very, don't get me wrong, this dude was, he's a very strong guy, been in a lot of scraps, been in some really hairy stuff, but I was like, if it's just me, I'm willing to do that.
Risk is mitigated by your surroundings a lot of times.
Yeah. I mean, like, and he knew this too. Like, he was firmly aware that if he did,
you had eyes on,
if he tangled with me, that was not going to, you know, it wasn't going to end well either way. Anyway. So he gets pretty much rehabilitated, right? He gets back on his feet. He's eating normally, like, got a job doing all this stuff. I got married. They moved in. He was still there. He eventually moved out, got his own place and all this stuff, and it was fine. He ended up getting in another situation though. And this is, I'd had the two girls and everything. And we said, yeah, well, you can come back and stay with us for a minute, for a while. Sure. Get you back on your feet. And then got into some drugs. So I told him, from the very beginning. And this is what I mean by, and I'm telling you, I'll tell him all this story just to understand, like, there's limits. Like, I told him, you know, you're good to stay here, but if you affect my family, and I was clear, this is where I'm coming from. Set expectations. Make sure you have limits and expectations, and you make those clear. If you get into drugs or whatever it is, and you bring that stuff into my house, you are no longer welcome here. Right? So then he starts getting into this stuff. Starts causing some problems. It was 2 days later, I drove him back up to his mom's place and said, no, you're not welcome here anymore. Right. So yeah, we got put into a weird situation that could potentially have been, a danger to my family. And that's when it's done. No, if there's a risk to my family, it's over. done.
We are finished.
Yes. So, but I still took the chance and I don't regret any of it. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. I'm not saying everybody should go out and find a homeless man and bring him into your house. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that for the church, though, to have someone come into service, you know, most of the churches nowadays have security and everything else.
Yep.
You know, they're all, if you haven't got proper security training, though, that should be a definite thing. They do go through some of these scenarios. You know, just don't treat anybody like you wouldn't. I mean, it's like the golden rule, dude. Do unto others as you do unto you, right? So, I mean, look, someone comes in, treat them with respect, encourage them, try to lift them up, you know, but, you know, I'm not saying, A, you don't have to give people, just hand them cash. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. Praying for them is the best, there's the number, like, you should do that no matter what, but it goes beyond prayer. If you're able to do something, do something. But definitely not the scoffing, the snobbery, that stuff does not belong in the body of Christ.
Agreed. Very much agreed. Also do your homework, right? A lot of people are very talented at giving you a story that is very heart-wrenching immediately. And a lot of people tend to respond to that immediate story. Do your homework. You don't have to say yes immediately. Ask some questions. Get into the heart of things.
Well, and especially nowadays on social media.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a GoFundMe page or whatever for everybody throws those up for something.
There are people that live off those things.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's scams everywhere. That's the other thing. Yep. Right. So yeah, you got to be smart about this stuff.
Absolutely.
But it's, I mean, I'm really focused on the physical encounters you have when you're like at church. Especially if you're at the grocery store, you know, that kind of thing. Stop judging people from their looks of it. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, some of the greatest conversations that I've had with people are out in the world where I just literally started talking to them and had an open conversation. I've told you about a few of them.
Yeah.
But one of my gifts, I guess you would say, is I don't have any fear of entering into any conversation that's I may have to ask hard questions, right? I told you about the one girl. I asked a lot of questions, and a lot of them you could tell were making her very uncomfortable, but I asked them because I truly wanted to know where she was, and I needed to know who I was talking to, right? I didn't you know, this goes back to that thing that I think a lot of churches are very guilty of, and I say this all the time, is that, okay, I'm going to pray for you. I don't know you. I haven't taken any time to get to know you. I'm going to tell you about salvation and about sin, and I'm going to give you all these weighty premises that come from the church. And they are weighty, man. If you really get into the wages of sin and salvation and all those things, those are very weighty.
Yes, they are.
Components in your life. How can you possibly approach a person in that manner if you've done nothing to get to know that person? I know many a person who are against religion because of what religious people did to them.
Yes.
So you really need to be very careful and do the work of, hey, what is your name? Where are you from? What brought you here today? You know, how are you doing in general? You know, learn who they are so that when you deliver that message, you're not the wingnut that's telling me about Jesus and you don't know anything about me.
Well, yeah. And I would say an addition to that, your actions of charity or evangelism, whatever the case may be, is really not for you.
Yeah.
Let's make this clear. Like, I see a lot of well-meaning people just throw up on social media every time they go volunteer somewhere, every time they do something this and
every meme,
everything about this stuff. And I would say that you're really approaching that the wrong way. You won't hear that from me. It's not for me. I'm not trying to lift myself up. Mm-hmm. I have used stories for testimony, actually, just like I did here, but all those actions need to be pointed back to the gospel. They need to be pointed back to the cross, back to Christ, not to you. That's where the intention has to be. If you're doing it for any other reason, then it's not the right reason, and it's really kind of does nothing. I'll just tell you that. So,
well, let me also say this, and I have said this several times, and I will say this until the very day that I die. It is people like that who give a testimony that is powerful, that were in this deep, dark place, and how they found their way out, that will always be the strongest way to reach people. I cannot tell you my most vivid moments where I have felt the presence of God more than it, outside of my kids and my wife and the birth of my children, is when I hear someone who's been in the worst possible situation and found their way to the light.
Yeah.
And the story of how, what happened, because here's what I think. The viscera of what happens to somebody is the foundation, the springboard of the story of how they found salvation, right? That's, to me, is a necessary part of understanding how powerful Christ can be.
Yeah.
I sinned, dude. I was sinking in sin, right? You hear those stories. I was doing this. I was an OnlyFans girl. I was a thug. I was a gangster. I was a murderer. I was this, I was that. And I found somewhere in all of that awful darkness, he shined enough of a light through where I found him. And I think, you know, I thought about this the other day, and it was just a kind of a thought, a fleeting thought. But what if you had just a church, what call it the church of testimony, where every Sunday was a testimony, where you got up there and you sat with someone who's been in the lowest low and come to the highest high, and people could come and listen to those stories, right? And really be inspired to come out of their low, right? I'll tell you, a lot of times I've been in churches and I've been having a hard time. And listen, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, great books, love them, read them, like who they are, like the fact that it's different aspects of one story. Love the book of Judges, have really learned to love Ezekiel and Exodus and all those books. But when I'm in a church and I'm having a hard time and I hear someone's story of coming from here to here, and knowing that the thing that pulled them to that point was their faith, that brings me a clearer understanding of how powerful Christ is.
Agreed. I mean, there's so many, you actually get to relate to that person. Yeah. That's the thing. And also too, I'll say that some of the people that look like they got their stuff together more like really well, either, I've seen those type of people mm-hmm. have like some tremendous anguish that they're going through.
Yeah.
Or that in order to get to that place, they had to come from somewhere that was unbelievable.
Yeah. And believe me when I tell you, there are a lot of people out there that look like they are calm, cool, and collected, that in actuality have just learned how to wear that mask really well.
Yeah. Ducks on a pond, bro.
Yeah, that's right.
The other thing I want to talk about church discipline a little bit.
Okay. Lay it on me, bro.
So as we talk about how to deal with sinners, it's actually an instruction in the Bible of how to do this. Like, because we're a body of human people who are broken and sinful.
That's right.
We're bound to screw up.
That's right.
There is a path to that resolution in the body of the church. Single, like if you have a problem with someone, you go to that someone first.
Yeah.
If that can't be resolved, it goes to the leadership of the church. If that can't get resolved, it goes to the body of the church.
Yeah.
Okay. So I see a lot of times where those steps are not applied. And it's in some cases, it's really bizarre.
It's funny because I feel like you and I, you personally went through that situation and I personally witnessed it.
Well, yeah, that so is true.
I
that is true. But in yeah. full disclosure, I don't have any grudges.
I don't think you do.
Or whatever for that. I view it as, and I think a lot of that was amplified by my temper a little bit after the fact. But I still have a lot of love for those people.
Yeah.
So I'll say that.
Yeah.
In my case, it was just weird.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, it wasn't the judgment of the situation. It was the way it was handled, right?
Like,
well,
that's true too. Yes. You know,
for me, it wasn't, they were necessarily wrong, so to speak. It was that they didn't follow the proper protocol to address the situation. And when they didn't, and they knew they didn't, I think there was a little bit of trying to mop up a mess.
Yeah. And I firmly was, and you know how, okay. So just again, I'm not the guy who shies away from conflict.
Yeah. Neither am I.
You know? So if there's something that goes on and I'm like, and that doesn't feel right for me. And I'm like, I'm full on. It's, you get full bore Reggie at that point. And they got it.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, no, yeah. Absolutely incorrect. No, not only is your, I didn't think they're actually in the result was like, I didn't think it was biblical at all. And I'll say it. Look, when I met my wife, it was a pretty short courtship and she started coming over to my house more and more, ended up staying more and more. And it was coming up the school year and she just moved in. We were getting married like, you know, in a month, and they were pretty much full on moved into my house. And, the church thought that was a really bad thing. You know, why would you be living with she's not your wife yet. And I had a conversation with the pastor and, you know, and I said, you know what, you're right. We shouldn't, I mean, you know, we're not really married yet. We shouldn't do that. I understand. It wasn't like it was we didn't even try. It was just like one of those things. It just
kind of naturally occurred.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we were in the process of a kid going to school in a different school zone, going to be doing that and all this stuff. And it was just, you know, and so she moved out. She moved out of my house, man, 3 weeks before we were going to get married, because I said, you know, we should set the right example for our son and all this stuff. And so we did that. And then it was like, you know, I don't remember the timing of it, but it was like shortly before we were going to get married, they decided I wasn't going to be able to be in a leadership position anymore. And it was really not notified me correctly. I didn't get approached.
Well, the way it went down, look, man, I'm not one to justify.
I'm trying not to be too detailed. I know
we're not going to be too specific, but the way it was given was not good.
But I appreciate that from a leader perspective, in that they were trying to keep things
biblical.
Yeah. And uphold, you know, so I get that. But the purpose of church discipline, though, let me say this really loud and clear, is for repentance. It's for a change. Mm-hmm. If that repentance has already occurred and that's already had a change of way, there's no need for that anymore. Okay. That's really where I want to make this clear. It's repentance is your goal, your change of lifestyle or change of thing. If that change occurs and it's lasting change, it's done.
Yeah. There's no further need for discipline.
No, there's nothing at that point. Right.
Yeah.
So that's where it really got silly.
It really got weird is what it got.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it just got weird.
But there are other cases though, that I've not been a direct recipient of, thank God, but have seen and been close to where it gets muddled up again. Because, and I think a lot of times people are trying to be too nice. And in a lot of ways, it's like, just tackle the problem directly, deal with it. If it can't be resolved, then you know what that's at that point where it's like, okay, look, you need a break.
Well, I think a lot of it too is when we begin to dissect leadership too much. And what I mean by that is, you know, I've heard a lot of pastors, and I'm not picking on mega churches, but I've heard it a lot more out of large churches that, well, I'm not good at this, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to assign someone else to do it. And I'm also not good at this. So instead of doing my due diligence and becoming better at it because I'm called to do it, now you wind up with 57 pastors. And when Julie and I went through a rough spot when we had an apartment fire. We lost everything. Like when I say we lost everything, we lost everything. The only thing, let me tell you something. There's nothing more humbling than having to borrow a pair of underwear from your father-in-law because you don't have any.
Yep. That'll do it. Also too.
It's a little weird.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it is just underwear too.
I know, but, and I was distraught.
Well, I bet.
To the point where even though I knew I didn't do anything wrong, I was distraught with our loss. And the church we were attending at the time, I wanted to talk to the pastor. I was a fan of the pastor, thought he was a good man, loved his sermons, felt like. So I called the church and I was like, I would really love to speak to this pastor. This is what's happened. And the only response I got, and this was a large church, was he doesn't do that. So it's not likely you're going to get to talk to him. I'm going to point you to this person that you've never met, you're not familiar with, you know nothing about, and we're going to send you to that person. Well, that just soured me altogether because I was already in a bad place, right?
Yeah.
And then I had a second experience. Now, this one was really strange. I was going to become part of a youth program, and I won't name the church. I'm not going to dirt on people. But so I meet with the head youth pastor. And I had experiences in the youth part of the church. And he said, well, we're going to have to vet you. I understood that. We're dealing with kids, right? But then he pulls out a book that is essentially mugshots with names, dates of these people that broke the rules and had been ejected from the program. I refer to it as the book of ostracization because it was just like, why are you showing me this? And he began to tell me all of their trespasses. And I was like, it's like, no. Yes, they did something wrong. Yes, they may have needed to be asked to leave the program. And I completely understand that. But who are you to take this person who has obviously struggled with something and kick dirt on them to the incoming person? How poor of a character are you that you need to dirt on other people to get your point across?
Yeah.
Instead of just going, hey, here are our rules. If you break them, we will have to ask you to leave the program. Do you agree not to break our rules? And this thing was thick, dude. And he was just defiling through it. And I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, it would have been enough to say several people have had to be ejected because they've broken the rules. But no, you literally were like, this is Bob Rogers. He did this, this, and this. We kicked him out on this date. This is what, and about the fifth one, I said, you know what? I'm good. I don't think I want to do this. And I got up and left.
Yeah. All right, so let me address this real quick. If you speak anywhere, doesn't matter if it's you're preaching, you're speaking at an event for business or whatever, I always say you should be open to conversation from people that you spoke to.
Yeah.
It's even more of that way if you're in a preach, if you're going to preach a sermon at a church. Even more so if you're labeled as a teaching pastor or a preaching pastor or whatever the case may be. part of that is to pastor itself is to shepherd a group of people. You can't do that if you don't converse with your people.
Well, here's the thing. If you're shepherding sheep and one wanders off, do you just let it go die?
No,
you go out and get that one. And I like, I've been a part of churches where I've started to go through struggles or I've been dealing with something. And I literally never heard from anybody, never was connected to, never was reached out to, you know, but a lot of this goes to the point too, Reggie, where I take the word family and friendship extraordinarily seriously.
And we should.
And when somebody says you're part of our family, you're telling me that whether that's your church family or your family, that I care about you enough to connect to you on a personal level.
You're prioritized.
When you fail at that, and then you act indignant about the fact that you didn't follow through, that takes all your credibility away.
Yeah. I mean, it does. And especially, I mean, look, I've been in some churches where I've been very close and in leadership positions or whatever. And it's like, there comes a point where some people are looking for pastors and they just kind of like, they can't find one. So they just pick one.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you know, I have a problem with like really young guys being pastors who are just married or they don't have any, or they're not married at all. They're that young kind of thing. Or they, have no kids. It bothers me. There's a lack of experience there to talk to a group of men, especially who are those things. And you have no idea. And I know this because when I was a men's leadership at our church, I told the pastors at the time, I said, look, if we talk about, I'm fine to talk biblically about this stuff, but you need to be the one who handles that stuff because I'm not a dad at the moment.
I'm not ordained to do that.
That's not where I'm at in life. And I don't want to have people rely on me for that. I'm welcome to talk to anybody, but you know, I don't want people thinking that I'm up here being an authority on all this stuff when I'm not one and I haven't experienced it, right? I've made it clear in those points. But in a lot of churches, that never happens.
Well, and adversely, I would say that it needs to be within the purview of someone in a leadership role that if they're not able to fully fulfill that role, that they're willing to step down from that role until they're capable of
something like that. Yeah.
You know, I hear a lot of times from people, well, we tried, but I'm busy and we can't really get around to it. Okay. Well, I get all that. I mean, I know how life is, but if you're too busy to carry out the mission of what you're trying to do, then you need to give that mission to someone who is not too busy to do it. And you need to step away and say, hey, I'm in a different stage of life right now. I've new baby, new job, new this, new that, whatever it might be. I'm going to give this to someone who has the time and the ability and the training to take care of it. And I'm going to step away and take care of these things that God's put on my plate right now. And when it's time, I'll come back and look into getting back into my leadership role. I think a lot of churches, especially smaller churches, suffer that because it's so easy to go, I would, but I'm too busy.
Yeah, it's way too easy. That's an easy road.
And that is never a sentence that you want to hear from a leader. I would, but I'm too busy.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, like it's, well, from a leadership perspective, part of being a good leader is to know when to delegate and when to not.
Absolutely.
Right?
100%.
I mean, and even there's some cases where you delegate to what they call delegate to the floor, where you just put it, you know, that's not really. Now, with people, though, you can't delegate people to the floor.
Yeah, it's not
okay. Possible. You know, that's not going to end well.
Well, it's not okay, and it's not positive in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, so getting back to the whole how to deal with sinners, let me just say that you surmise this with, you deal with a sinner like you want to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Let's just put it simply. That's really what this boils down to. We all have trying times. I think most, well, some of us have lived part of our lives where we had nothing, fires or whatever. And you really, I mean, look, you're going to come to church in like a pair of freaking, you know, jean shorts and in a holy t-shirt or something, because that's all you got. And you know what? That's fine. I don't care. Come to church. That really, at the end of the day, just show up.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not up to you to be accepted because of you just don't have anything.
Yeah. It's up to the church to accept you as they were accepted.
Yes. So, you know, look, be guarded and be mindful of those situations where complete total strangers come in off the street that are, have something going on. I mean, obviously that's a situation that takes a pretty unique, you know, mindset to deal with, but you still have to approach that with a loving manner without the side glances or the scoffing and all that nonsense.
And don't be afraid to ask questions.
No.
Right?
No.
Ask questions. Hey, how are you? How's life treating you right
now?
The
worst thing you can do at the church, and that here, when I've been looking for churches, worst thing, especially now, I'm hypercritical. I really am when I'm going to a new church, because I'm very analytical at that point. I'm looking at this as like, how are they upholding the gospel? How are they presenting the gospel? Are they living the gospel, right? Mm-hmm. And part of that is, if the greeter at the door is the only one that says anything to me, it's a red flag for me. That's a red flag for most people. If the only person says anything to you, if you come to church, is the greeter, the church has failed.
Yeah.
That's just step one.
Yeah.
Right?
And another thing I would encourage is, if you're leadership in the church and you see a member of your church behave in a way that is less than welcoming or becoming to someone who's there, who may be under errant circumstances or whatever's going on, if you see that person treat them with any level of disdain, condemnation, or just be simply ignorant of their existence, you as a leader are responsible for calling that brother or sister in Christ out and saying, hey, you had an opportunity.
Not publicly.
You don't ostracize somebody.
No, you do.
But you do it private. You sit down with them and say, hey, I saw you do this. I saw you say this. I saw you not say this.
I saw the look on their face.
What's going on?
Tell me what's up.
Tell me why you felt the need within this church that is a welcoming church to not be a welcoming individual.
But this goes back to just being a leader, dude, in our current culture and everything, with the battle of all this masculine nonsense, which I do believe we're turning the corner on, to be fair. I think there's a lot of things that are moving.
I still have my doubts, but I'm
it looks more, I think we have more rising up happening. Okay. But you know, the it's like, we need tough church leaders.
Yeah.
We got to have them.
You need good men,
yeah,
not nice guys.
Nope. Got to be a good man. I don't care if you're nice. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm accused of being an asshole more than not. I like it. I mean, to be honest,
I'm just going to be a good man. I'm just going to be a good man. I'll be nice to you, right? But I'm not a nice guy.
But I'm not going to. So this is the point about this whole thing. Like, at dealing with the sinner too, this applies.
Yeah.
Regardless of where you're at, what you're doing, all that kind of stuff, that doesn't mean I'm going to accept that as like, okay.
Yeah.
And I don't have to. That's not that role. What's the job here is to counsel, encourage toward the correct direction that whatever that is needs to go to align with how Christ has set out living to be. That's where it is. And that's not going to be nice all the time.
And to be clear, it is our job to hate the sin and love the sinner.
Yes. Yes.
Our job, not Christ's job, not God's job, our job. Christ hated the sin. and loved the sinner because he became a man.
And
in order to, because that is why God cannot look upon sin. Why? Why can God not look upon sin, Reggie? Because he hates sin. So he had to let his son die and cover us in his blood so that God could look on us and see his son. Let's be clear. God hates the sin and the sinner, but it is the sacrifice of his son that enables him to provide salvation for us.
Yes.
It is our job as the ones who are saved to hate the sin and love the sinner. That is not God's job.
Well, God is looking for everyone to find the right path. If you're going down the wrong one, there's probably, he's throwing flags in your face and you're just you're just not aware.
Or you have pre-existing knowledge that you're going in the wrong direction and you're just simply choosing to ignore what you're called to do.
And two, the other part about this is, especially if you're dealing with somebody who has never heard, never been a part of a church, never been a Christian, never had a Christian family and all that kind of stuff, we can't expect them to have the same view as you do.
Absolutely.
I mean, we even saw, well, one of the Instagram things we were looking at last week said that, but yeah, you can't expect them to see the world the same way you do. It's an opportunity for you to help them see part of that journey that leads to that way, right?
Yes.
So look, this is a problem, and this is particular to the Western Christian church that we have here in this country. I don't know. I haven't visited enough of the third world countries and stuff to know what little I have has been very positive. So I can't really say too much about that, but I've been very involved with the American church and these are some of the issues that I see still today.
Yes.
It's really sad. And also to never be too busy to open your dining table to someone who needs a meal.
The Bible's the ultimate table setting book, brother. That's what it is. I mean, it's the ultimate
break
table
bread,
setting
bro.
Book. Let's break bread.
Let's break bread.
Let's break bread and get to know each other. First.
Most, I think all churches really, if had my way, it's like you'd have a weekly meal.
Yeah. Not a weekly Bible study, not a weekly meeting. We're all going to get together and just break bread and have a potluck and just get and just and I'm going to encourage you to get to know each other, not preach to each other. Because we're going to get enough of that, right? Get to know each other.
That's
really,
it.
Really sit down That's and it. Dig deep in each
That's
other.
It.
Right?
That's it. That's live life together, go. Dude. That's it.
That's it.
We're R&B Talks.
Guys, like, comment, but definitely subscribe. We would love to have you subscribe to our channel. We just want people to hear the things that we talk about and hope that what we talk about helps people. So, or just, send us comments and call us crazy. We're good with it.
Check us out on Facebook and Instagram. You can always send us messages through there.
Yeah. Please, if you are a person who is pretending to be a Facebook marketer, shut up.
It's nonstop. It's
all the time. Every time I check our messages, there's 8 dudes pretending to be Facebook marketers. Please stop.
Your access would be canceled unless you respond to this message. Click the link.
That's right.
And the link goes to Alibaba, com.
I'm not going to click the link.
Nope.
So you know, if you're there and you're like, I'm going to send a message to click the link. Don't, because we're not going to click the link.
All right. Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
We're R&B Talks.
Later.
See you.